Last time we were together, we saw the Lord dealing with danger. Remember how he calmed the storm? Then he rebuked the disciples for their doubting his desire to save them. They said, "Lord, we're all going to die and you don't even care." And he said, "Well, that's probably not really true." He did care and he did take care of them and he did stop the storm. And that should be a lesson for us. Instead of freaking out, just trust the Lord. It might look like the boat's going to go down, but as long as he's in there with you, you're going to be okay. Next week, Lord willing, we're going to take a look at Jesus dealing with death and disease. But today, we see Jesus dealing with demons. You know, as we study the Bible, there are a few topics that always grab our interest, it would seem. You know, some people just go nuts over the whole end times thing. They want to study the 12 lampshades and the 4 cereal bowls, and they just want to understand it all. And if they can, as if they can figure it out, then it's all going to come together. And nothing wrong with that. It's funny to see people be so, you know, tuned into that one thing. Some people get fired up over the idea that, you know, a 360-day calendar as opposed to a 365-day calendar changes all the dates and times in biblical prophecy. And, of course, when the prophecies were given, they were given with a 360-day calendar in mind. And so some people just go, "Oh, I've discovered the secret of the universe," and they just don't think about anything else. Some people get excited about the theory that angels operate at a higher frequency than we do. And because of that, that makes them invisible to us because our eyes, you know, are limited to a certain frequency range where it's expressed as colors. And they're here, and according to the Word, I'm pretty sure they are. You know, "Hi, guys." But you can't see them. And some people are just intrigued about that stuff. You know, the thing about how the human soul is just like the data on a floppy disk. See, and some people just go, "Ooh, I want to get into that." But there's one thing that nobody, or very few, I should say, get excited about studying or looking into or hearing about, and that is things that have to do with demons. Who they are, what they are, where they come from, where they go, what they do. This passage is not going to answer all those questions this morning. But it does give us some insight into the way demons operate. And more than anything, though, it gives us some insight into how Jesus deals with them. And in that, I think there's a lesson for us how to deal with demons. So let's start reading. We're going to read the whole first 20 verses of chapter 5 here. So here we go. "Then they came to the other side of the sea." Now remember, they took off and then that storm came up and Jesus calmed the storm. And so now the boat lands on the other side of the sea to the country of the Gadarenes. "And when he'd come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He had his dwelling among the tombs and no one could bind him, not even with chains. Because he'd often been bound with shackles and chains. The chains had been pulled apart by him and the shackles broken in pieces. Neither could anyone tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs crying out and cutting himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him. And he cried out with a loud voice and said, 'What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me.' For he said to him, 'Come out of the man, unclean spirit.' And then he asked him, 'What is your name?' And he answered, saying, 'My name is Legion, for we are many.' Also, he begged him earnestly that he wouldn't send them out of the country. Now a large herd of swine was feeding there near the mountains. So all the demons begged him, saying, 'Send us into the swine that we may enter them.' And at once Jesus gave them permission. Then the unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. There were about 2,000. And the herd ran violently down the steep place into the sea and drowned in the sea. So those who fed the swine fled, and they told it in the city and in the country, and they went out to see what it was that had happened. Then they came to Jesus and saw the one who'd been demon-possessed and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who saw it told him how it happened to him, who'd been demon-possessed, and about the swine. Then they began to plead with him to depart from their region. And when he got into the boat, he who'd been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus didn't permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he's had compassion on you." And he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. How should we deal with demons? Three things that you need to know. The first one is simply that Satan will attack. You can count on that. It's going to happen. Some of you have been there, done that. Some of you haven't yet, but you will. It's like that old saying about hard drives. There's only two kinds, those that have crashed and those that are gonna. Well, you've either dealt with the enemy in the past or you're going to deal with him in the future. That's just the reality. It's his job. But you know, you can't blame every single sin on Satan. You can't say the devil made me do it. That's, now if you're old enough to remember Flip Wilson, you're in the right place, because you can't blame every single sin on Satan, but you can trace the root of every single sin back to Satan. Remember John 10:10, where it says, "The thief," that's Satan, "does not come except to steal, kill, and destroy." See, Satan's mission, his only mission, is to come after you and bring you down. That's his job. He's been working on it a long time, and he's really good at it. He's smart. He's been studying human nature ever since creation. And he knew how to get to the first man and woman, and he knows how to get to us. That's just what he does. He will attack. Now, the question always is, how does Satan get to us? How does he influence us? How does the enemy get us to do what he might want us to do, or think what he wants us to think, or, you know, make decisions that would be, that would favor his plan, the bad plan for our lives? Ray Stedman, the late Ray Stedman, was a pastor in Southern California. He wrote a paper on this that really opened my eyes to this, and it made more sense than probably anything else I've ever read or heard about this process of how the enemy actually goes about influencing people, God's people and everybody else too. He comes at us through the senses. I mean, those five senses are all we've got to interact, to interface with the world that we live in. Primarily, he would use the eye gate or the ear gate. I seldom see Satan, you know, tempt anybody with a certain smell. Although, when my wife's making chocolate cake, I don't know. Maybe that's how that works. But usually it's the eyes and the ears. He puts things, or we allow ourselves to see things that we really shouldn't see, that really we don't want to see. And we hear things that we probably shouldn't hear and often don't want to hear. Just, you know, language itself. I grew up a musician, which is, as far as vocabulary goes, it's one notch below longshoreman. And so we dropped, you know, certain bombs about every other word, sometimes two in a row. That was just the way me and everybody I knew talked, and I didn't learn it from my parents. I didn't learn it at school. It just sort of came naturally from hearing it around the playground, from hearing your friends talk. You go, "Oh, that's clever, the way he used that particular profanity. I think I'm going to use that too, just that way. Because I want to be clever, I want to be cool." And we hear it. And see, if we didn't hear it, we would never have thought of it. And we see things that we would never have thought of. We learn about things that we never would have learned of if we hadn't opened our eyes and our ears and our senses to this stuff. You know, there are, I remember when my daughter was little, she, for a short season, she became a fan of horror movies. You know, slasher movies. I mean, you know, and the lights go out in the storm and the guy comes out of the closet with a something and does something to somebody. And she used to just love to watch those. And when a new one came out, she'd either rush to the theater or if the video came out, she'd go down and get the tape. And I never really was interested in that stuff, never really intrigued by it. But if she had one playing at home, I'd maybe come into the room and see it. And, you know, we'd seen, I mean, a guy with a whatever, with a hockey stick or something, and, you know, next thing you know, there's blood everywhere and body parts, and, you know, all the kids are going, oh, wow, man, cool. But it's really not cool. I always think of that phrase I learned during the OJ trial. You can't unring the bell. You know what I mean? Once it's in there, you can't get it out of there. Now, I know people who've had the, what would you call it? Just incredible misfortune to witness some awful things. A suicide. Suicide in itself is an awful thing, but if you have to walk into the room and actually see someone do whatever it is that they do to take their own life, that image sticks with you forever. You can't unring that bell. You can't get that out of there. Pornography. You know, when you're a little boy, I guess you're kind of curious and your friend steals his dad magazine and you're going, ooh, ah, look at that. And then you get a little older or you get access to the internet and next thing you know, they got your credit card number and you're just seeing stuff that you really shouldn't see. It poisons you to see it, but you can't undo it. And then you can't have a normal, healthy physical relationship because this weird stuff is in your mind. You can't, you know, enter into certain activities because this stuff comes back, these sights, these sounds. I remember, in fact, when Ron and I were in that band I was talking about, we had a gal come to us one day after, Wednesday after youth group or something, and she said, you know, you guys, she goes, I love you guys, and I know you mean well, and the songs, I mean, the lyrics are all about, you know, Jesus, and it's all that. She goes, but I just got to tell you, back when I was younger, I was involved in, you know, some stuff, some really bad stuff, and it seems like along with that stuff, it was always accompanied by this music that is a little bit like, you know, the music that you're playing. And so every time I hear you guys playing, I kind of get this thing, this funk and this feeling comes over me and it makes me uncomfortable. And, you know, and she was gracious enough not to, you know, be asking us to stop ministering to the kids. But my point is that because of that experience, it came in through the ears and because it was associated with this negative, this demonic experience, she just couldn't shake that. And so the enemy comes at us. We watch TV, we listen to the radio, we read the magazines and the newspapers and the movies, and we see stuff and we hear stuff. And whether it has, you know, red pajamas and horns isn't the point. It influences us. And once we're influenced by it, you can't become uninfluenced. You can't back the tape up and erase it. Well, what's wrong with a little bit of this? A lot. And not to pick on any one group, but just I think we can all relate to this. I don't know if we've got anybody here. It seems to be primarily appeal to women, but not just women. The whole deal with the soap operas. My mom called them her stories. My story's coming on, you know, at 2:00. I gotta go see my stories. Well, in the 60s, when my mom watched her stories, it was bad enough, but nowadays, I'm just, without going on a rant, let me just tell you, if you're watching those stories, you're just opening the top of your head and pouring in poison. And these same, you know, nice, decent women who would, who watch those stories. Oh, there's nothing wrong with the stories. Did you hear what, you know, this time Rachel slept with Bob and now they're going to have a, you know, you don't need to reinforce that kind of nonsense. But then we see some kid standing, you know, he's like back in the corner in the shadow behind a tree going, and you know what he's doing. And you think, I'm going to call the cops. And I have to say, you know, in my experience, I have to wonder which is worse. You ever think about that? And I'm not saying one is worse or better than the other. One's illegal and one's on TV for hours every day. But poison is poison. And we let those things into our lives. You know, the thing is you watch those stories and then you think that's how real life is supposed to be. And if your marriage doesn't work out, you get a divorce. You marry the next guy. You marry your neighbor. You marry your friend's husband. That's just, they do it on the stories. And so you do it. And it's like, this is how life is supposed to be. It's crazy. I'll tell you from personal experience, you know, remember we had Ken Mansfield here a while back, almost a year ago, the guy who worked for the Beatles, you know, remember him? And he showed that great film and talked about his time. Then he also gave his testimony, how the Lord delivered him from sin and healed him from cancer. But I grew up listening to that music, and not just the Beatles, but all kinds of that popular music. And I remember hearing, like, the song Yesterday. Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away, but now it looks like they're here to stay. Well, fast forward now a few years, and I have my first serious girlfriend, and then she breaks up with me. Well, yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away, but now it looks like they're here to stay. See, I believed it. It came in through the ears, and I learned it. I took it seriously, and so now it's like my life isn't worth living because Becky broke up with me. And you go, ha, 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 you know, when you're 13 or 14, that's no big deal. Hey. We learn from what we see and what we hear. The enemy influences that, and that's step number one. Step number two is that we get into situations where we respond based on all the input we've taken in over the course of the years, and we respond emotionally. Your feet are to the fire, and instead of having all that time spent, say, in God's Word or prayer or fellowship, or just spiritual communion with the Lord, you know, instead of that, we've been influenced by the world our whole lives, and we've not only allowed it, we've embraced it. We've made an appointment to be poisoned at 2 o'clock every afternoon on Channel 6 or turn on that radio station. You know, and is yesterday evil? No, it's not evil, but it has an effect. So anyway, now we get into a spot, and it's, what am I going to do? You got to make a decision. And all of that input that we've been taking in our whole lives, now we make a decision based on how we feel. And how we feel is based on that stuff. Now, I hate to think, John wrote that song, I'd rather see you dead, little girl, than to see you with another man. Well, where's my gun? You know, I mean, John said it. It must be true, right? That's how a lot of people behave. And so we make these emotional decisions, and because they're based on emotion, not logic, not even human logic, let alone godly logic and wisdom, but because they're made on emotions, they are, the vast majority of the time, bad decisions. And now we've gone from a little TV, a little movie, a little radio, a little magazine, to an emotional decision, to now a bad decision that's going to affect my life tragically forever, and I can't undo it. Let me tell you about a guy I knew, I barely knew him, named Monty. You remember Monty, you guys from Crossroads do. Monty was the guy at the church that came down to mow the lawn, and the church was much smaller then, but it was still a pretty big campus. You got to mow the lawn, you got to, you know, weed the flower beds and tend to things, kind of a gardener, landscaper type guy, and he was a young guy, single guy, you know, and he was just Monty at the church, the guy that mowed the lawn. Hey, Monty, how's it going? Oh, it's going okay. Well, one night, Monty drives down to see his girlfriend. And I don't know, something went wrong and there's a fight, there's a hassle. I don't know if she was breaking up with him or if there was another guy. I don't know the details, but next thing you know, Monty's upset and he gets in his car. And you know how it is when you get in your car when you're mad or upset, and he steps on it. And then the next thing you know, the cops are behind him. Red lights are flashing and he's not slowing down. Monty's not pulling over. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. He doesn't do that. He doesn't pull over. He drives up to the parking lot of the Steak Burger, which isn't there anymore, on 4th Plain in Vancouver. And he gets out of his car and ducks down behind the door and pulls a pistol out from under the seat and has a shootout with the police, and they kill him. Now, where did Monty learn that? Miami Vice. That's where he learned it. How did Satan influence Monty? Just, oh, Monty, mow the lawn, Monty. How did he influence Satan to the point where he would get in a, just like in a movie, he'd get down behind the door and, you know, and only the cops aren't playing. And they shoot back. And they don't miss like the guys on TV. He learned it from watching TV. He learned it from movies. Maybe it was John Wayne or Clint Eastwood, who knows exactly where he got it. But the point is, how does the enemy influence us? The stuff we see, the stuff we hear, those ideas are planted. And then in the heat of the moment, you make an emotional decision, not a logical decision, not a prayerful decision, just in the heat of those emotions, and 9 times out of 10, it turns out to be a really, really bad decision. Satan's out to get you. Satan will attack you. You can count on that. That's the first thing. The second thing we need to know is that society will abandon you. Where was this guy? This Gadarene demoniac? He was living up in the cemetery by himself. Had they tried to help? Said they put chains and shackles on him, but he just broke them. Probably hurt somebody in the process if they got too close at the wrong time. He actually hurt himself, cutting himself with stones, self-destructive behavior. Guy was obviously, you know, we know from the story that it was a demonic possession responsible for that. But man, the guy was hurting himself. So society just said, let him stay out there. Just never mind. See, the problem is that social solutions don't work on spiritual problems. And if you've ever been involved in the social services of our government or our society, then you know what I mean. I mean, they can be helpful. I've been on food stamps before and grateful for the, you know, food that they provided for me. But look at it this way. Social services, what do they do for you? You got a spiritual problem, a behavioral problem, or an emotional problem. Well, they put you in a program, right? You need a program. You need a support group. You need a counselor. We've got a program. You read this book and go to these meetings and do this thing, and maybe there's some physical therapy involved, whatever the details might be. We put you in a program because that's what we do. We're social services. And then, after we put you in the program, we involve the psychology. Get the psychologist involved. You know, we'll get you in therapy. I mean, a program might be good, but therapy, that's what you really need. One-on-one therapy, group therapy, you know, all kinds of therapy. Massage therapy. I mean, you know, you need to go out and climb a tree and jump off and let your friends catch you, and then we'll take care of you, you know, because the psychologist tells you that's, you need to get to the root of your problem. If you just go back and find where the initial wound happened, and then you'll find out why when you're 46, you know, you cry every time you hit a red light in traffic. And that's where that goes. That's where that goes. And we're gonna find your inner child. I like what Don Henley said, although I can't quote him. I'd like to find your inner child and kick his little butt. So the social services put you in a program. The psychologist gives you therapy. Then they turn to medicine. We'll fix you with drugs. we'll give you antidepressants, and then we'll give you depressants to counter the antidepressants. And if you think I'm picking on you, don't. I was on antidepressants for a long, long time myself. I give the Lord the credit for helping me through the process. And, you know, if I ever need to, I'll go back on. So don't think that I'm picking on that or down on that. But it's just that the answer isn't always drugs. You give you a mood drug. We're going to lift your mood. We're going to lower your mood. We're going to speed you up. We're going to slow you down. Hey, I almost went to jail for that. Would have if I would have got caught. But that's society's, you know, we'll give you a program, we'll give you therapy, we'll give you drugs, and if none of that works, we'll lock you in an institution. Because we don't want to deal with you, not really. Society will abandon you if you've got the kind of problems that this guy had. Society always isolates or avoids those it can't help. You know, in this case, like we said, he ended up living in the cemetery. Verse 14, we see that when they wanted to find out what was going on with him, they had to come out there to him. And that's what the world will do. You got an emotional problem, got a, you know, a heart problem, got a spiritual problem. We'll just lock you up some way, keep you drugged so you don't cause anybody trouble. And anybody who wants to see you can just go out and visit you Sundays from 2 to 6. That's the world's way. See, society can't solve spiritual problems. So what they do is they send you away. Years ago, I had a good friend named Larry. Larry was skilled, incredibly skilled, as a luthier. And that's the guy that builds and repairs musical instruments. Anything from an electric guitar to a violin, he could, you know, take it apart and put it back together. If it was broken, he could fix it. And he knew all about the woods and all that art stuff and also the electronics and electricals. I mean, the guy was just a genius virtually. Had a little shop in his basement. And, you know, he was always a little weird, but, you know, we all were. we never came out of that blue cloud, so who knew what anybody was really like. But later on, Larry got into some real trouble. I mean, real trouble. Hands behind the back, lock you in a cell, trouble. And it was only then that I found out kind of Larry's story. It was like when he was a little kid, his parents had problems, and so they left Larry and his brother, Barry. They left him with Grandma. Well, Grandma didn't want to raise two little boys. I mean, she took them, but she wasn't really into it. And so what Grandma would do, she'd take Larry and Barry out in the backyard and strap them in those little harnesses that they make for kids and then put them on a leash and hook Larry and Barry to the clothesline like a dog run. And she'd leave them out there all day. Maybe bring them a sandwich around lunchtime, maybe. A little glass of Kool-Aid. Where are the boys? Oh, they're out back playing. And I remember Larry telling me once about getting to the end of that leash and just looking around and having this rage and this indignant, you know, how dare you feeling rise up. And well, years later, he's an adult. All that manifests itself in bad behavior. The enemy has influenced his mind through the senses. He makes bad decisions based on emotional responses. Next thing you know, Larry's locked up in jail. And after a while, Larry's locked up in the funny farm. If just once someone had said, Larry, I think you're the greatest. I just love you. If just once someone had said, Larry, you know what? You are a talented little boy. The way you work with wood and tools, I can just tell that you're going to really do something. If anybody had ever done anything like that for Larry or Barry, he wouldn't be locked up right now. But see, that's what society does. It just locks you up. Satan will attack you. Society will abandon you. But the Savior will accept you. Notice here that who comes to who? They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gadarenes. Jesus came to him. He didn't wait for the guy to come. Jesus took a boat through a storm. a life-threatening storm to get to this guy. See, the Lord comes to you when others reject you. Isn't that your experience? It's mine. It's a lot of ours experience. The Lord comes to you when others reject you, and he will come to you too if he hasn't. All you got to do is be willing to meet him. He'll come. He helps you when others give up on you. Look at verse 15. The folks have from town have heard about the pigs and all that rigmarole, and they come and they want to see what's up. It says, so they came to Jesus. They're kind of out there by the cemetery still on the side of the hill, and saw the one who had been demon possessed and had the legion sitting and clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Clothed. Luke in chapter 8 tells this same story. Luke adds one little detail. As the guy was in the tombs, you know, howling and cutting himself, that he was naked. I mean, they couldn't catch him. They couldn't keep the clothes on him. Here he is, sitting with the Lord, clothed. I read at the top of the service from Isaiah 61. Let me read verse 10 again. I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall be joyful in my God, for he has clothed me with the garments of salvation. He's covered me with the robe of righteousness. We're out there in the tombs, howling, hurting ourselves. Society wants nothing to do with us. We're a danger to them, or at the very least an inconvenience. The Lord comes to us. We accept him. We meet him. We welcome him. And the first thing he does, he clothes us with salvation, the robe of righteousness. The Lord accepts us when society rejects us. He accepts everybody who comes to him, even me. Even you. And then he sends you to tell others your story. Verse 18. When Jesus, got into the boat, so they're going to leave now. He who'd been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. Please let me go with you. Oh, I can relate to that. Lord, I want to go where you go. You know, I want to walk right beside you, right behind you, and I'm never going to leave. And I want to get in the boat. I want to get out of the boat. I want to go when you sleep. I want to sleep beside you. I don't want to miss a word. I don't want to miss a thing that you do. I want to be influenced by what I see you do and by what I hear you say. Lord, that's what I want. That's my impulse. However, it says in verse 19, Jesus didn't let him. But he said, go home to your friends and tell them. Tell them the great things the Lord has done for you and how he's had compassion on you. He sends you to tell others your story. See, you're qualified. You realize that? Every one of us. How old is this guy? He's like, what, 30 minutes old in the Lord? He hasn't been to seminary. He hasn't even heard Jesus preach a good sermon yet. He didn't get out his Old Testament and remind himself. I mean, nothing. All the guy had was his experience with the Lord. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. That's all he had, and that's all he needed. And Jesus said, you're qualified. You go tell everybody else what happened to you. You don't have to explain the doctrine of transubstantiation, you know, or not, or any sort of technicality. You know, just go tell them your story. You're qualified. You are qualified. You have a story. Tell it. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't know what to say. Well, just, you know, it'll come to you. Get started. Well, I used to live a godless life. Okay, now you're on a roll. Then what happened? Well, then somebody gave me a tract, or I got a tape, or I saw a guy on the Christian TV or the radio, or my friend talked to me and just explained to me that God doesn't base his acceptance of you on you cleaning up your act and getting everything right. that God sees you right where you are. He knows every sin, even the ones that you don't yet recognize as sin. And still, he invites you and he welcomes you into his kingdom, into his family, into his heart. And all you got to do is just kind of say, oh, yeah, yes, Lord. Okay, Lord, that's what I want. I want whatever you have for me. That's what I want. And whatever your story is, that's all you got to say. And you're not trying to make a sale. You know, they all put a notch in the gospel gun deal. Got another one. It's not your victory if you do. It's not your failure if you don't. Maybe you're planting seeds. Maybe you're the first one that ever explained the gospel as it really is to that individual. And it might take 6 months to a year or 10 years or whatever for all that to process until they finally comes to the point where he says, Lord, I give my life to you. Well, what more do you want? You're qualified. You are absolutely qualified. You know, years ago, I'm getting so old. Everything happened to me so long ago. It scares me. Pretty soon it'll be like, you know, 50 years ago. But this one was only, I don't know, 30-some years ago. I don't know if you've noticed, but I have a bit of a weight problem. And always have. I was a fat little kid, and I was a fat young man, and now I'm look where I am. But God's not done with me yet. But I remember once I was like in my late 20s, I think mid-20s, late 20s, and I heard about this new diet thing, this stuff you take and mix it up and drink it, you know, four of them a day. And then for dinner, you could have like chocolate cake and hot dogs, whatever you wanted. And I said, I'll try it. I mean, I've tried everything else. Weight Watchers, Weight Lookers, Weight everything. I've read the book and got, and I've been there and done that. And they all work. You have to do it. And that's the hard part. So I got this new thing and Mary told me, somebody at work told her and she told me, I said, I'll get it. Here's the money. Bring home some. And I started using it. You know what? It worked. The weight, like, melted off of me. Now, I found out years later that I lost more muscle than anything else. So I still can't, you know, do a chin-up or anything. But I was losing weight almost a pound a day. It was kind of exciting. I get up in the morning, I get on the scale, and yep, 1 pound less than yesterday. I lost like 20 pounds, 30 pounds, 40 pounds, 50 pounds. I lost 65 pounds. I got down to an almost normal weight. Now, I still felt like a, you know, balloon, like a blimp, but physically I lost all that weight. And so I even had a little button that I lost 65 pounds. You know, ask me how. And anybody who asked me, I'd say, oh man, you gotta try this stuff. Let me tell you about it. You mix it up with water, you drink it, you have chocolate cake and hot dogs for dinner, and you just go, and you lose a pound a day, and it just works. And anybody who would listen to me, I would go and I would tell them, just like, I actually said this to one guy, I said, for me, it's like preaching the gospel. Now, I wasn't a believer then, so the gospel didn't mean anything yet. But that's how I felt about it. I must go. It's like, see, here's my point. It worked for me. And because it worked for me, I wanted to tell everybody. I'd see some fat guy or some, or I'd say, hey, buddy, I got just what you need, man. And it's easy and it's cheap and it works and you can't go wrong. And I'm not even trying to sell it to you. You got to buy it from somebody else. And I would just run around and I'd say, oh man, and people that knew me, hey, what happened to you? How'd you lose the weight? Oh, let me tell you, you know, and I'd give them the deal, how to get it and all that stuff. It worked for me. And so I wanted to tell everybody. And see, when you come to the Lord and salvation comes into your life, when you're clothed in the robe of righteousness, it works for you. You ought to want to tell everybody. What was it? A few weeks ago, we saw Jesus cleanse the leper. And he told him not to tell anybody, but he went and told everybody. He just couldn't contain himself. See, that's the deal. He tells us to tell everybody. We tell nobody. He told him to tell nobody. He told everybody. You're qualified. You don't have to read a book. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to quote a single Bible verse if you don't know one yet. You don't have to have any kind of training whatsoever. All you have to do to be qualified is to invite the Lord into your life, have that experience, and then tell others what happened. The Savior will accept you. Now, before we close this section, I want to take just a minute to look at three requests. Look at verse 12. The demons begged him, saying, "Send us to the swine or into those pigs that we may enter them." The demons request, "Lord, send us into the pigs." His answer, "Yeah, okay, I'll do it." It's an affirmative answer. Why did he do that? Two reasons. One, as a proof that he had the authority to do that. And second, as a warning. As a warning that he had the authority and the power to do that. "Lord, send us into those pigs." Good idea. Have at it. And next thing you know, the pigs all drown. Verse 17. The citizens of that area of Gadara over there says they began to plead with Jesus to depart from their region. Their request, "Please leave." Leave? Please leave? The Lord comes through a life-threatening storm. The boat lands. He gets out. He solves the one problem that they all have, this dangerous maniac who's hurting himself and threatening them, running around naked in the cemetery. I mean, that's a pretty good... I mean, I'd be glad if the exterminator got rid of my mice. These guys should be rejoicing. He solved our problem. I can't believe... Not only do we not have a problem, but look at all he's done for this man. This is a miracle. And what do? Instead, "Hey, would you mind just moving on down the road? Would you just take this routine? I mean, we're not into this." They ask him, "Please leave." And Jesus leaves. His answer, "Yeah, okay. Will you leave?" "Yeah, I'm out of here." Why? Because he doesn't stay where he's not wanted. He comes wherever he's invited, wherever he's welcome. He never says no when he's welcomed and invited. But he doesn't stay where he's not wanted. You don't want Jesus in your life? That's easy. That's easy. He won't be there if you don't want him there. And the third one we already talked about, the man in verse 19-20. "Can I follow you? Can I go where you go and do what you do?" And to this man, in this occasion, he says, "No, you can't." And why not? Because your ministry starts at home. Your ministry starts in your house. Your ministry starts at the person on the couch next to you, or across the breakfast table from you, or lying in bed next to you. Your ministry starts at home. Now, maybe the Lord has more for you than just that, but it starts at home. The enemy roams about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. But roaming and roaring is all he can do. It's all he can do unless you let him do more. See, you can resist the enemy. The Bible tells us resist the enemy and he'll flee from you. He's going after the sickly, the weak, the puny. You put up a bit of a fight, hey, you don't have to overpower him. He just say, "Okay, never mind, I got easier targets to deal with." Resist the enemy and he'll flee. You can guard your heart. You can guard your mind. You can guard your soul against the things that the enemy would use to influence you. This is something I still struggle with. There are just some things that I like to indulge myself in. Not evil, not wicked. Don't anybody get scared. You know, it's like when Pastor Chuck confessed to us all that he'd been watching SmackDown. You know, because to him, that had become a huge obstacle to his walk with the Lord, and he confessed it and repented. And so, you know, I don't know where you are, but there's some things that I still tolerate, frankly. I even pay for them. How dumb is that? I'm going to have to get this tape and listen to it. You know, whether it's stories or romance novels or certain music or whatever, everything that comes in through these five senses has an effect. So Are we going to continue to say, well, I'm not that worried about it? I'm sure Monty got a real kick out of Miami Vice. Wasn't planning to ever get in a gunfight, but guess what? That's how it works. When you're tempted, that gal at work, that new gal gives you a little too long of a look, or squeezes your hand a little too funny when she shakes your hand, or that birthday kiss slides around the cheek and catches a little lip. You know what you're going to think of? You're going to be thinking of that story that you saw, or that magazine you looked at, or that internet porn that you saw, and the thought's going to cross your mind, hey, I bet I could, that might be fun. See, and you wouldn't have that, you wouldn't even have to deal with that if you had guarded your heart and your head and your soul in the first place from that influence. When Satan comes after you, and he will, when society abandons you, and they will, when the world gives up on you, who will you turn to? See, you don't have to be demon-possessed to experience the consequences of Satan's influence over your life. But you do have to surrender your life to Jesus to receive his spirit and his power. That's reality. How will you deal with that?